Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Ever had that problem where you can't remember what day of the week it is? All day, I couldn't remember what day of the week it is. But now I know because Jimmy Akin's here and it's open forum. That means it must be either Tuesday or Thursday. And I know we already had a Tuesday this week. So it is Thursday, open forum day here at Catholic Answers Live. Open forum means if you have a question about religion, about spirituality, philosophy, faith, if you have a particular question about the Catholic Church, all of those are welcome. 888-31-TRUTH is our number, 888-318-7884. And as I said, joining us this hour is Jimmy Akin, senior apologist here at Catholic Answers, author of A Daily Defense, 365 Days Plus One to Becoming a Better Apologist, and also a man of another accomplishment that we will talk about shortly. Hi, Jimmy.
Well, thank you. I don't know that it's so much describable as an accomplishment. That implies something you do. This is more something that's been thrust upon me.
I see. So, like, for example, the fact that Teddy Roosevelt is on Mount Rushmore. That's not an accomplishment of Teddy Roosevelt.
Right. He didn't carve himself on Mount Rushmore.
I see. Yeah. So this is not
He was carved.
Right. But this is akin to being on Mount Rushmore.
On a much smaller scale.
But tastier.
Hope that's enigmatic enough for folks. But in the fullness of time, all shall be revealed.
888-318-7884 is the number. If you have a question about the Catholic faith, if you are not Catholic and you'd like to know something about Catholics, maybe you don't even know what a Catholic is. If you'd like an explanation, give us a call. 888-318-7884. 888-318-7884. When will the fullness of time come?
I think it's after the first break.
After the first break comes the fullness of time?
You're the host.
Okay. All right. No, after the – okay. And I can't say accomplishment, but it is a Mount Rushmore-like honor that has been conferred on Jimmy Akin. So, okay, after the first break, we'll do it. So let's just get to calls then because let's get some work done before we have
let's
to.
Let's do.
All right. Michael in Houston, Texas, listening on Guadalupe Radio. Michael, thank you for your call. You are on with Jimmy Akin.
Hello. A quick question. I was curious. In Mark 11, verses 12 through 25, Jesus, he curses the fig tree.
Right.
And I wanted to know, is there an official teaching or interpretation that we think he meant by that? Or what does that mean?
The church doesn't generally have official interpretations of particular Bible passages. It leaves that up to Bible scholars to discern. But having said that, there is a fairly general consensus, as far as I'm aware, in the biblical scholarly community about what's happening in this passage. One of the devices that is very common in Mark is something known as a Markan sandwich. And a Markan sandwich, and I'm gonna explain it a couple of ways. One way is it's sort of a mini chiasmus. A chiasmus is a kind of structure that you find in writing where it starts with one element, goes to a second element, and then and possibly third or fourth element, and then reverses itself and heads back through the same elements to the first. It's kind of like going up one side of a pyramid and then down the other. In Mark's case, he uses the very small versions of that, which are known as Markan sandwiches. And basically, he'll have two elements with one thing sandwiched between them. That's why it's called a Markan sandwich, because he's sandwiching something between two related things. And the cursing of the fig tree appears to be one of those. In Mark, what happens is Jesus, on his final visit to Jerusalem, he goes, he sees the fig tree, he curses the fig tree, then they go to the temple, and then they come back, and they see the fig tree has withered. And so you have the visit to the temple sandwiched between the two halves of the fig tree story. And this is considered a classic Markan sandwich. And what Mark does with these is he uses the two halves of the story at the front and the back to in some way shed light on or comment on the thing in the middle. And so scholars have looked at the cursing of the fig tree as a kind of enacted parable of what the status of the temple is. Because when Jesus first approaches the fig tree, he sees that even though it is giving forth signs of having fruit, because this kind of fig tree in the Mediterranean world would put out fruit before its leaves. It was famous for fruiting before leaving. And so when Jesus sees that this fig tree is in leaf, even though it's not yet time for the fruit, the tree is signaling, hey, I've got fruit, and he goes and he finds that there's none. And he then curses it and says, well, may no one ever eat fruit from you again. And that seems to reflect the situation with the Jewish temple, where even though it's not the end of the world yet, there's a lot of outward religiosity, a lot of show, like the leaves of the tree, signaling spiritual fruit. But in reality, the leadership of the temple has become corrupt, and it's not at all a place exhibiting the kind of spiritual fruit it's advertising. And so the message is that just as the temple has, just as the fig tree has a lot of outward show but no real fruit, and that leads to its being cursed, so the temple has a lot of outward show but hasn't really produced the spiritual fruit that it should, and so it also is cursed. And then Jesus, just a couple of chapters later, prophesies that it in fact is going to be destroyed, which it was in the year 70 AD.
How does that sit with you, Michael?
Oh, that's great. I really appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
Okay. No problem.
Thank you, Michael, very much. Have you ever had a Markin sandwich with cheese or just no?
I generally like cheese on my Markin sandwiches.
Yeah, okay. Well, Jimmy, you are just cooking today. We got time to take another call before the first break.
Always try to leave the listeners satisfied.
Sated?
Yeah, sated.
Ryan in Midland, Texas, also on Guadalupe Radio. You are on with Jimmy Akin. Ryan, your question, please.
All right. Thanks for taking my call, guys. Now, Jimmy, I need your opinion on a quote that I found in a book written by Pierre Trudeau.
Okay.
And it says, quote, when the government is illegitimate and tyrannical, each individual may destroy it by violence. The tyrant makes unjust war on each individual. Each one has the right to kill him, unquote. And I'm curious, from a Catholic perspective, would it be justified for a civilian clergy, laity, and et cetera, in the church to take this type of action if a situation warrants it? If so, how does this quote relate to or tie into the church's belief in a just war that St. Augustine lined out?
So it obviously, if you're conducting a revolution politically, then that would be something that needs to be operated under the conditions of just war theory. You can't just go off and do something. Now, I haven't seen this quote. I haven't had time to study it. My impression, just from listening to you read it, is that the necessary qualifications from a Catholic point of view are not being made in this quote. If you look in the Catechism of the Catholic Church, it not only has a section on just war that discusses the conditions that need to be applied both leading up to a just war and during the prosecution of a just war, it also has a section dealing with the conditions that need to be met for political rebellion. Because obviously this is something that comes up periodically in human history. You get tyrannical governments that don't respond to the will of the people and don't reform themselves, and sometimes serious actions need to be taken in order to remedy that situation. And so this is something Catholic scholars have thought about and moral theologians have discussed, and there's, as I said, a section in the Catechism that deals with it. One of the conditions that is mentioned in that section is that, in fact, I'll mention a few of them, but you need to foresee reasonable chance of success in addressing the situation. And that's something that is a condition that's not mentioned in that quotation that you read. The author of that quotation doesn't mention anything about the people involved in this revolution need to have a reasonable chance of success, because otherwise it's not – if they don't have a reasonable chance of success, they're just going to get themselves killed and other people and make the situation worse for everybody. So that's a condition that's important. Also, another one of the conditions is that it has to be foreseen that the revolution will not lead to even worse disorders, because that's something that also happens frequently in situations where a government is overthrown. That's no guarantee that the replacement is going to be any better, and in fact, it may be worse. And you can create a power vacuum with a weak and ineffective provisional government into which something much worse can move. That's, for example, something that happened after the French Revolution. After the French monarchy was overthrown, you then had an unstable situation that led to a tyrannical situation where Robespierre and his compatriots moved in and created a reign of terror in France that was even worse than what the monarchy had been. And so that's a known phenomenon, and it's something that is taken into account in the church's teaching in this area, but doesn't seem to be taken into account in the quote you mentioned. So I'd refer you to the Catechism of the Catholic Church for a fuller enumeration and a more balanced enumeration of the conditions that need to be met before revolutionary action can be undertaken morally.
Ryan, thank you so much for that call. It's about time for a break, so we will say thank you and move on. And when we come back, we will talk about the Mount Rushmore-like honor being bestowed on Jimmy Akin.
Really inflating this.
Really? You think so? We'll be right back after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live with Jimmy Akin is coming right back.
This is apologist Tim Staples, and I'm here to tell you about the most exciting and innovative Catholic book in years. In today's world, people from countless perspectives pose challenges to our Catholic faith every day. In conversations, through the mass media, on the internet, and more on the infinite collection of social media platforms. There's no getting away from this daily onslaught. We as Catholics need to stand strong to be prepared to mount a daily defense, to respond to the many challenges that we as believers are presented with every day. To that end, my good friend and apologist extraordinaire Jimmy Akin has come up with what will surely be a go-to resource for years to come, a daily defense. A daily defense takes up a different challenge for every day of the year, 366 in all, teaching you how you can defend the faith and give answers to Catholics and skeptics alike. And it's user-friendly, with challenges and answers indexed alphabetically by scripture verses or by topic, so finding the answers can be quick and easy. Order your copy of A Daily Defense today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Pope Francis said, "All of us are called to mature in our work as evangelizers. We want to have better training, a deepening love, and a clearer witness to the gospel. St. Paul Street Evangelization's online school of evangelization will equip you with the tools you need to be an effective evangelist. We'll ask for a pledge of financial support, but if you're unable to give, we'll set you up for free. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
And welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Jimmy Akin is our guest this hour. Next hour, Father John Trigilio will be here. So 2 hours of open forum today. I want to remind you that this September 27th through 30th, we'll be at the Hyatt Regency La Jolla in right here in beautiful sunny San Diego. And at that time of the year, it is almost guaranteed to be sunny. Not a guarantee, but almost. For Catholic Answers annual conference, the theme this year is Faith and Science, Friends or Foes. And you'll be speaking, Jimmy?
Yes, I will. I'll be speaking about the relationship between science and Scripture.
Looking forward to that. Although there's a little bit about that in the Daily Defense.
There is, yeah. But there will be more in my talk.
Dr. Stacy Trisenkos will join us. Mm-hmm. Father Terrence Ehrman and Raymond Leo Cardinal Burke will be the keynote speaker at the banquet. We'll also do a live Catholic Answers.
So important taping. He gets four names. Raymond Leo Cardinal Burke.
I know that is a lot of names, yeah. Isn't it? I wonder if he's even got another one, like a middle name in there somewhere.
I think that's Leo.
Oh, yeah. Okay, all right, gotcha. It's not Cardinal. Cardinal's not his middle name? Okay, gotcha. Last year, when people did the early bird pricing, because we have the early bird pricing, and it goes through July 2nd this year, you get the deal, mm-hmm. the early bird deal.
Right.
But you also get a treat that goes with it.
A worm?
Not a worm.
But the early bird gets the worm.
The early bird does get the worm, but we because people don't really like worms anymore, uh-huh. That's really gone out of fashion. Okay. Last year, we gave him a cookie, a Catholic Answers cookie.
Oh, with that sounds a lot better than a worm.
Yes, it was
although
fantastic.
Higher in carbohydrates. But.
And so Erica was mad at me because I had said on the air, everybody's going to get this cookie. So they ended up having to give it to everybody. But this is just the early bird special.
Okay.
And this year, they're not going to get a cookie.
Oh.
They've got something even better.
Better than a cookie.
Far more valuable than a cookie.
Okay.
It will be.
So just to set the stage, so like the cookie last year, my understanding is it like had Catholic Answers logo
the shield on it.
The shield
yeah.
logo with blue icing and stuff
right.
like that. And so it was a fancy cookie.
And it was actually delicious, which mm-hmm. is usually those kind of ones that they, you know, put a logo on. They mm-hmm. taste like kind of like plastic.
But this was high quality.
Yes.
Okay.
This year, we're giving out M&Ms.
Uh-huh. Cool.
Yeah,
I like M&Ms.
Yeah. But it will not have the M&M logo on it.
Okay.
In its
Catholic
place.
Answers logo?
No. Jimmy Akin, not the Catholic Answers logo.
Oh.
It will be your...
Plain M&Ms.
No. It will be your face.
Yeah.
The face of Jimmy Akin on the M&Ms.
Yeah. They told me about this the other day. The Jimmy Akin M&Ms. So.
Yeah. So. And we got to think of a name for them. We should probably have a contest to think of a name for them.
Like Jimmy Akin M&Ms isn't descriptive enough?
It's descriptive, but there must be something, some clever thing that people can come up with out there. That will be the special gift mm-hmm. for those who are early birds.
Well, it's certainly something I never anticipated. I had no idea. Chris Chet came into my office and we had a brief meeting, and he said, first question, and then he said, no, I'm going to save that till the end. And uh-huh. so we had our meeting, and then at the end of it, I said, so what was the first question? And he said, would you mind having your face put on M&Ms? And I totally did not see that question coming.
Yeah.
I would never have expected that as a question. And I just laughed and I thought about it a second and I said, well, it's totally absurd and basically harmless, so I'm on board.
Yeah, right. Which yeah. totally absurd is that.
I like totally absurd yeah. things that yeah. are provided they're basically harmless.
Right, yeah. right. Yeah. And it's even better than basically harmless, though. It's mm-hmm. there's and it's for people that really
it's
like
whimsical.
Jimmy Akin. People who really like Jimmy Akin mm-hmm. will enjoy getting a Jimmy Akin M&M. People who don't mm-hmm. like Jimmy Akin.
Yeah. You could eat it. You could crush it under your foot.
Yeah.
You could, any number of things.
So it's good for everybody.
Yeah. So it's a win-win.
And have you seen the image yet? Do you know what it is?
That is yet to be determined.
Oh, okay.
We're apparently going to digitize a photo and use that. And I just recently, this last weekend, when I as you know, you did something similar, Si, we're up in at the Crystal Cathedral for taping with EWTN.
Yeah.
And in addition to doing a taping, they also had a photo shoot
yeah.
with me. So I have very recent pictures of what I look like now. So I'm going to contact EWTN and see about getting those.
Yeah, I did that little photo shoot thing too. And I just noticed that when they say smile, for some reason I forget how to smile. I'm like, I just can't get it to look at all natural. Well, maybe my smile doesn't look natural. I don't know. Maybe it's a... cringeworthy. I have no idea. So listen, if you want to come to the conference, sign up now.
And you get the special whimsical Jimmy Akin M&Ms.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Special roommate, $149 per night. Full conference ticket includes the banquet dinner with Cardinal Burke. And you get those M&Ms as long as you sign up before July 2nd. Do so today at CatholicAnswersConference.com. CatholicAnswersConference.com. Plus, we have a lot of fun at the conference. Let's go to. Is this really serious? Every single call is coming from Guadalupe Radio today. Texas is alive with questions. Nate in Dallas, Texas, on Guadalupe Radio. Your question for Jimmy Akin.
Hi. Good afternoon. So my question is: does the Immaculate Conception undermine the argument of free will? And first, can you hear me? Because I'm using a headset.
You're a little muffled, but we can see what we can do to address that.
Well, I'm going to take the headset out and just talk without listening for about 20 seconds. All right.
talk without listening.
So my question is, if God simply watches and knows the answer, then maybe you could argue that free will exists. But if God acts on that foreknowledge, does he lock you in? So in Mary's case, he knew in advance that she would say yes, and so he went ahead and pre-baptized her. And then he also went and conceived John the Baptist, because he was going to play an integral role. So could Mary have said no? Was it even possible? Did she really have a choice? And I say no, because if she had chosen no, then that would have made God wrong. It would have made the Immaculate Conception null and pointless or worthless, and John would have had an aimless existence. So does that mean that that Mary did not actually have free will in that choice?
No, it doesn't mean that. In the case of a person who's – so let's – you're sort of asking two related questions that have a bearing on free will. The first one, I guess you could construct it based on the concept of the Immaculate Conception itself, because one of the things that the Immaculate Conception does is it renders a person – and its definition, in fact, is that it renders a person free from all stain of original sin. And in essence – in terms of the will, what that seems to do is place the will in a state that's analogous to the state that all of our wills will be in once we're confirmed in grace. At the, you know, assuming we die in God's friendship and so forth, our wills will be confirmed in goodness, and so we won't end up choosing anything evil. We will still retain free will in that we can choose among different goods, but we just won't be able to choose anything evil, because at that point our will is such that it won't be able to choose evil. It won't have that kind of freedom, but it does still have freedom in that it can choose among different goods. And so one of the things that – so Mary retained free will in that sense. She could choose among goods. In terms of could she have said no to the – to becoming the mother of Jesus specifically, well, that's something that traditionally Catholic scholars have said yes, she could have. That's something that Pope Benedict, for example, talked about in some of his writings on the subject, that that she could have. And from that, one can infer that becoming a mother, becoming the mother of Jesus, was a good thing because she, in fact, did choose it. But refraining from becoming the mother of the Messiah also would have been a legitimate thing. Otherwise, if it was, if it would have been sinful for her to say no, then she wouldn't have been able to exercise her will in that way. And so for Mary, both choosing to be his mother and choosing to refrain from being his mother seemed to have been legitimate options, so that she had a genuinely morally free choice. Now, this leads to the second layer of your question, which has to do with God's foreknowledge of the situation. You're absolutely right. God did foreknow that she would choose to become Jesus's mother. And in anticipation of that, he did a variety of things, including making her immaculately conceived and also having John the Baptist be conceived. Now, what would have happened if she had said no? We don't know exactly, but there were other women God might have turned to. And if he had known that Mary was going to say no, he could have chosen to have one of them be immaculately conceived, gotten the whole plan back on course, and had John the Baptist fulfill his mission and so forth. So all of this pre-planning wouldn't have gone to waste, presumably. At least we can say that it needn't have gone to waste, because God had other options for proceeding forward even without Mary. Now, he may not have made any such provisions because he foresaw, in fact, she is going to say yes. But mere foreknowledge, and this is something we've covered more broadly, mere foreknowledge of a situation doesn't deprive that situation of having free will operate in it. I may know, this is a common example I use, if I'm standing, let's say, at the corner of the roof of a building and I can see a street intersection below me, and I see two cars are careening towards each other and they're going to hit each other, the mere fact I have foreknowledge of that collision does not mean that the drivers don't have free will or that I somehow forced them to collide. I just happen to know what's going to happen because I can see it from my vantage point. And God, from his vantage point outside of time, foresees sees all of history all at once and thus sees every event and can take action from the eternal now to anticipate that event. In the same way, if I'm standing on a building and I can see this crash is about to happen, I can, based on that foreknowledge, take action myself. I might, for example, take out my cell phone and call 911 to let them know that they're going to need to send emergency workers to this address where this crash is about to happen. So if I, without disturbing the free will of the drivers, can take action based on my foreknowledge to help set up the situation that's going to happen once the crash occurs, in the same way, God, based on his foreknowledge of Mary's choice, could take anticipatory action to set up the situation that would occur once she said yes. And that doesn't deprive her of free will any more than my dialing 911 deprives the drivers of free will.
Nate, thank you. We are coming up now against a hard break, so I got to say thank you, and we will move on. 888-318-7884 is our number. We're talking, well, whatever's on your mind today. If you have a question about the Catholic faith, if you have a question about religion in general, Jimmy's always happy to take your question. 888-318-7884. Talk to the man whose face will be on the M&Ms, Jimmy Akin, right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Wouldn't it be great to have a book to give to anyone to explain exactly why Catholics believe what we believe? The good news is that now there is. Why We're Catholic is the groundbreaking resource by apologist Trent Horn. That one book you can hand to anyone as a starting point for helping them find their way into, or back to, the practice of the Catholic faith. This Lent, plant seeds of faith in the hearts and minds of your non-Catholic friends and family. Order your copies of Why We're Catholic today. You can order your copies of Why We're Catholic by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Did the Catholic Church add books to the Bible? Or did Protestants remove 7 books from the Old Testament? Why Catholic Bibles Are Bigger takes you on a fact-filled tour through the history of the Bible, revealing the whole story behind the lost books of the Protestant Old Testament. With the latest information and discourse on crucial issues, Why Catholic Bibles Are Bigger is a book that belongs in the library of every serious student of Scripture. And as a special bonus, if you order online, we'll add an e-book copy of 15 Myths, Mistakes, and Misrepresentations about the Deuterocanon to your order absolutely free. Get your free e-book today. Order your copy of Why Catholic Bibles Are Bigger by logging on to our online shop at shop.catholic.com.
The EWTN home video highlight for March is Liturgy of the Hours for Lay People with Father Timothy Gallagher. Father Gallagher reveals how the treasure and beauty of this ancient prayer can lead lay people to holiness. Order your DVD at EWTNRC.com, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, or call 1-800-854-6316.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. It's Thursday. That means it's open forum, and it means at some point the groovy music will be playing today. I love groovy music Thursdays. I wonder if it's going to come in when Father Trujillo's here.
I don't
think he appreciates it as much as you do.
I love the groovy music. It needs to go on. We need a longer version, but we've talked about that.
Yeah,
before.
I know. We do. We need. But we never talked to you about it, Darren. We're always talking to Nick about it. Longer version of the groovy music. 888-318-7884 is our number, 888-31-TRUTH. And open forum means anybody can call. Whether you are Catholic or not, you are welcome. And whatever your question is about our life here on earth as humans, our religious quests of various sorts, and particularly about the Catholic Church, all that's welcome. George in Santa Rosa, California, you are our first caller, not from Texas today. You are on with Jimmy Akin. George, your question.
Hello, Jimmy. Hello, Side.
Hi.
Hi. I'm not a Catholic. I'm a Protestant, but we can go to that some other time.
Okay.
I was wondering, about a year or so ago, you wrote a tome called Daily Defense.
Yes, uh-huh.
And I've not read it. I've just read excerpts of it.
Okay.
And one of the things you talked about was one of the topics was there was a canard that religion causes war.
Uh-huh.
And you said sometimes yes, sometimes no. It depends upon the situation.
Now, generally, no.
I'm sorry?
Generally, no. The claims to the contrary tend to be exaggerated.
Okay, so that is a paraphrase.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the examples you used was the American Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
It has several other names, like the War Between the States and so forth.
Right, because in that war, both sides were Christian. So it's not like Christianity caused this war.
So it wasn't like, unlike, say, the 30 Years' War, which had taken place a couple hundred years before that. That was primarily religious.
Mm-hmm.
So you had Catholics and Protestants on both sides.
Right.
And you actually had some Jews as well.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that actually wasn't really my point. Could you address the whole John's Rot scandal and how that led to the official cessation of diplomatic relations between the United States and Vatican for almost 120 years?
Well, I'm not an expert in the history of diplomatic relations between the U.S. and the Vatican, and I would have to do research to check how it's related to the John Surratt situation. I am familiar with the basics of John Surratt's story. For people who may not be aware, there was a conspiracy. Initially, the plot was to kidnap Abraham Lincoln. This was the John Wilkes. There were a bunch of conspiracies. But one of them was led by John Wilkes Booth, who ended up shooting and killing Abraham Lincoln. But that wasn't the original plan. The original plan was to kidnap Abraham Lincoln and other government officials and hold them in order to arrange a prisoner exchange, to have a bunch of Confederate prisoners of wars released in exchange for releasing the president and the other government officials. And obviously this was much more than one man, John Wilkes Booth, the actor, could do. So he had a number of Confederates.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah. Who included a man named John Surratt, and they met at a boarding house in Maryland that was owned by Surratt's mother, Mary Surratt. And there were various other people who were involved as well. Booth ended up changing the plan. And so the anticipated plan didn't end up materializing. Most of the conspirators were caught, including Mary Surratt, who was, I believe, she ended up being the first woman executed in U.S. history. At the time, that was something very shocking to
yes.
have a woman who was executed. The one conspirator who got away, although there are rumors that Booth did, but that's not the view of most historians. The one who is known for a fact to have gotten away was John Surratt. And he escaped to Europe and spent a number of years in Europe in hiding. He obviously needed to make a living while he was over there. And actually, one of the things he did was join a militia that was in the Papal States known as the Papal Zouaves. And the Zouaves were basically volunteers. They tended to be young Catholic men who were single, and they volunteered to help protect the Papal States from, for example, Italian revolutionaries.
Mm-hmm.
And so after the war, John Surratt went over to Europe and became a member of the Papal Zouaves. He volunteered for service there. And there is even a photo of him in his Zouave uniform. They have kind of a distinctive uniform with a fez and kind of baggy trousers and stuff. It's rather picturesque. And then he got recognized. And an American recognized him and reported him to the chief U.S. official in Rome. And he fled again and traveled under various guises and was on his way to Egypt when he was arrested by U.S. agents and taken back to the United States. He ended up being released because by this point the statute of limitations had expired. And so he ended up living out the rest of his life as a civilian in the United States.
Wow.
He gave lecture tours talking about the conspiracy and things like that. And so I'm familiar with his story. I'm not particularly familiar with the impact that it may have had on U.S.-Vatican relations. But that's a basis. That's a basic sketch of what happened. I can imagine that it would have had potentially an impact on U.S. relations, but I'd have to do some research to say exactly what that was and so forth. Obviously, the Vatican and the United States have good relations today, and that's something to celebrate.
Which is another conversation altogether and how and why that came about. But you see, the Vatican was harbored a fugitive. That was what millions of Americans were angry about.
Okay, so it's understandable that that Americans might perceive it that way as harboring a fugitive. I don't know that that's actually the case, though. I don't know that that Pius IX, who was the Pope at the time, or others at the Vatican knew who John Surratt was. I'd have to do some checking to see, was he even using his own name at that point, because I know he used other names during his flight. And so for all I know, he may have been using an alias at that point. They may have had no idea who the guy was. Now, in the United States, once it was reported that he had been over in the service among the papal Zouaves, it would be a natural narrative, particularly with all of the anti-Catholicism in U.S. culture at that time. You know, the Know Nothing movement still had a lot of clout in the United States. It would be natural, just like the media likes to spin narratives today, it would have been natural for the news media of the day to spin this as Vatican harbors papal assassin conspirator.
Yeah.
When in fact, Surratt was not trying to kill anybody. And the Vatican may have had no idea, for all I know, who this guy was. So it could have well had a negative effect on U.S.-Vatican relations for an extended period without even the facts being understood correctly.
George, thanks very, very much for that call. I hope that that was helpful to you. We go now to John in Boston, Massachusetts, listening on the Station of the Cross. John, your question for Jimmy Akin.
Hey, Jimmy and Cy. Thanks for taking the call.
Happy to.
I have a family member that I've been trying to discuss the faith with. She's kind of fallen away.
Mm-hmm.
And she's open to reading different material. And I actually said, you know, you should call into Catholic Answers and they'll answer any of your questions. And she said, well, I want a neutral and objective source.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, well, maybe either with us or against us. I'm not really sure if there's a neutral and objective source that's going to, support the case for Catholicism. So I thought you might be able to help me.
Well, so what's her issue? Because obviously, I mean, there are sources that strive to be neutral and objective. I mean, the Encyclopedia Britannica, Wikipedia even tries to do that, and actually with a remarkable degree of success on occasion. There are other sources that, I recall a column, I think it was by Dear Abby a number of years ago, like Who Started Your Church? And she acknowledged, even though she was Jewish, she acknowledged that Jesus started the Catholic Church, if I'm remembering that incident correctly. I mean, I remember the incident. I'm just not sure, was it her? I think it was Dear Abby. So there are any number of sources that are non-Catholic that try to be objective, and that's a great thing. I would say, though, if you want to know what somebody really believes, and if you want to know what the best case is for that position, then you should ask the source. If I want to know what some other group believes, let's say Mormons, I'm not just going to read things that are written by people who are hostile to Mormonism. I'm not even just going to read things that are neutral about Mormonism. I'm going to read things that Mormons have written, because I need to understand their beliefs from their perspective, and I need to understand the case that they make for them. And usually the people who have a belief are those who have put the most energy into figuring out what's the best case for it. So if I'm looking at a situation, I'm going to read from a variety of viewpoints, but I'm going to make sure that among those viewpoints are the people who, in fact, I'm trying to understand. So I would so in any event, that's a kind of general sketch of the procedure I'd recommend. But are there specific issues that your sister is looking at?
Well, you know,
family members looking at
all religions are equal, and some mythology and some truth kind of blended into all religions, and depending on how you grew up culturally is the one you kind of adhere to. So I was thinking, you know, is there any atheists or agnostics that, you know, started from the point of, you know, being in opposition to the Catholic Church and then ended up recognizing the actual truth and make a good case for it?
Yeah, sure. I mean, there are any number of people who, coming from an atheist or other secular perspective, who have ended up becoming Catholic. Jennifer Fulweiler.
Yeah, Jennifer Fulweiler.
Would be an example.
Devin Rose.
Devin Rose. So we've had quite a number of people actually here on the air who have come from that perspective. Some of them have written books about their experiences. In terms of every religion has an element of truth, well, that's true. That doesn't mean they all have an equal measure of truth, but every religion has something it's right about. That's just going to be true from the nature of religious propositions. Everybody's going to get something right simply by the law of averages. Even people who are atheists are right about some things. You know, you could go, if you want some sources specifically from a perspective of an atheist who became Catholic, try going to shop.catholic.com, typing in atheist. You'll probably get some material there. Also, I would recommend, even though I'm not an atheist and haven't been one, I'd recommend my book, A Daily Defense, because it does deal with issues like the ones you're talking about are all religions equal, or do you know, what's the result of the fact that people usually stay with the religion of their birth? What evidence can be presented for the Catholic faith? So I'd suggest getting a copy of A Daily Defense as well. In it, I'm obviously arguing for a Catholic position and for a Christian position more broadly, but I try to be very objective and very factual and very accurate in all of the claims I make. So I try to be very, even though I'm coming from a particular perspective, I try to be very objective about the facts.
John, do you have a copy of A Daily Defense?
I do not.
All right. Well, hang on. We'll get your address. We'll send you a copy of A Daily Defense. Another person, another guy who strikes me as an atheist, he was actually a fascist neo-Nazi who became a Catholic, is Joseph Pierce.
Right.
And he has some wonderful writings on that, too. So you might want to look at Joseph Pierce. But hang on. Give us your address when we
Leo Labresco is another one.
Oh, yeah. See, yeah. It keeps happening.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thanks, John. Thanks very much for the question. We'll send
Thank you the book.
Let's take a break. We got to go to a break for a quick second. We'll be right back with more Open Forum with Jimmy Akin on Catholic Answers Live right after this.
Hello, everyone. This is country music artist Colin Ray. Do what I do and keep it right here on Catholic Answers Live.
God helps those who help themselves. Preach the gospel always. When necessary, use words. Sayings like these are such a part of tradition that we assume they come from the Bible, the saints, or famous Christian writers, even though nobody can seem to place their origin. By sheer repetition, they have acquired a halo of truth. In What the Saints Never Said, Trent Horn takes over 40 of these well-known but actual dubious sayings and attempts to track them to their true source. The result? He finds some that are close to what was really said, many that were misattributed or twisted beyond their original meaning, and more than a few that were just plain made up. By setting the record straight, Trent roots out theological errors that can lead us away from Christian truth and offers authentic quotes from Scripture, saints, and scholars that will draw you closer to that truth. Get your copy of What the Saints Never Said today by calling 1-888-291-8000. Visiting the shop at Catholic.com or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite Monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Open Forum on Catholic Answers Live. Jimmy Akin, our guest this hour. Jimmy is senior apologist here at Catholic Answers, the author of A Daily Defense, 365 Days Plus One to Become to Becoming a Better Apologist, and also now a man on the M&Ms. 888-318-7884. Not yet. Soon to be the man on the M&Ms. Let's go to Robert.
M&M elect.
You're one of the M&M elect?
Yeah.
Is that what you
want? Yeah.
Wonderful. Robert in Camdenton, New Jersey, you are on with Jimmy Akin.
Can you hear me, Jimmy?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Can you hear me?
Yes. What's your question?
Okay. I was at Bible study this afternoon. We're studying the book of Genesis. Mm-hmm. And someone said, you know, everyone knows they're going to die. I didn't say this at the Bible study, but I thought actually, I have no concept of my own death at all. And I guess it's basically has something to do maybe with Scripture saying some of you will never taste death, or will the world ever end? But God's been very providential to me, seeing me through near death, seeing me through extreme pain. But I have no ideation about that. And I guess probably one of the things is I don't want to be, cut off in life. Maybe when I'm getting real better from my mental illness, maybe when I'm getting better or like maybe Legion getting better and not being healed. But I don't know how to put it. I've been at my dad's funeral. I know he's dead, but I don't have any idea of basically what it means to be dead, or of my own, I have no concept of my own death.
Robert, so you would like Jimmy to address that situation about whether or not that affects your life as a Christian? Robert?
Yes.
Is that what you would like Jimmy to address?
Would I like to be a Christian?
Yes.
Let's establish first, are you a Christian?
Oh, I'm Catholic, yes, sir.
Okay, so you're a Christian. That's great. What's the question you'd like me to address?
I don't have any concept of death. What does it mean?
Okay. it sounds to me like you do have a concept of death. You may not understand it fully, but you obviously know what you're obviously familiar with the word death. You've used it just now a number of times. You have something of a concept of it because you've been to your father's funeral. Your father's not alive anymore. So you have some understanding of death, at least from the perspective of this world. In terms of building a fuller conception of what death is, death is a process that occurs under the ordinary operation of the laws of nature as we age. One or another of various things will happen to us that will cause our body to break down. Sometimes that's an illness. People may get, Spanish flu and die as a result of Spanish flu. Or they may get injured. A piano could drop out of a window because they took too long trying to decide where they wanted to go for an evening. There are any number of things. An injury could do it. Or just ordinary aging can do it. As we age, like our bodies are physical systems, and any physical system that's not miraculously protected from the ravages of time will wear down and break down because of the fact that our universe has entropy in it. And humans in particular are organisms that seem to be programmed biologically to die after a certain period, unless they're miraculously supported. So at some point, through one or another of these factors, a breakdown will occur with our body that causes our body to stop functioning. And at that moment, the spirit, which is the human spirit, which is the animating principle of the body, departs and so goes to be with God for a time. And during that period, which is known as the intermediate state, a number of things can happen to the spirit while the body is here on earth. The spirit may go to hell. If the person died outside of God's friendship, the person, the spirit may be purified of remaining attachment to sin and go to heaven. It might even go directly to heaven in some cases. Then at a point further down the line, at the second coming of Christ, the situation will be reversed and the spirit and the body will be reunited together and the person will return to physical life. So death is a temporary state of affairs caused by a separation of body and spirit brought on by typically by a breakdown of the body, either due to illness, injury, or aging.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Mr. Jimmy.
No problem.
Thank you for that call, Robert. Please call anytime. A pleasure talking with you. 888-318-7884 is our number, 888-318-7884. We go now to Charbel in Buffalo, New York. Charbel, you are on with Jimmy Akin. Your question, please. No? All right. Hang on, Charbel. We'll come back to you. Let's go to Mike in Lebanon, somewhere, Lebanon. There's a lot
Illinois.
Of those. Is it Illinois? Okay, listening to EWTN on Sirius Satellite Radio. Okay. Mike's not there either. Steve in Ann Arbor, Michigan. I hope you're there listening on Ave Maria Radio. You're on with Jimmy Akin, Steve.
Hi, how are you? Can you hear me?
We can.
Yes, what's your question?
Hi, so just a quick background is I was in the military, and I was a veteran of the Iraq war there, and when I got out, you know, had a lot of problems and been to some, you know, dark places type thing. And
sorry to hear that.
One of the problems I'm running into with, and this has been going on since I, you know, got out in 2011, is I cannot seem to find priests that are willing to help work through, like, the spiritual side of mental health problems. Like, they either seem, to me, they seem very, like, fire brimstone, you know, like a priest telling me, you know, you've got to get this under control or you're going to go to hell type of thing. To most of the time, priests that I reach out to say, well, I'm not a mental health professional. I can't help you there. And it comes down to, you know, culpability of sin within people that have mental health problems. And where does that lie? And how does that, you know, impact? Because I know, like for myself, I don't want to use that as a crutch and say, well, you know, just because my head popped off, spun 360, came back down, and I did some, you know, did some terrible things or had some, you know, some things that are not the greatest, you know, I'm not going to say that that's not sinful and type of thing.
So, Steve, you'd like to know about the relationship between mental illness and culpability for sin?
Yeah, okay. Pretty much.
I'm not trying to rush you, Steve. We're just right up against the end, so we got to get Jimmy to give me an answer here.
So, first of all, I want to say that I'm very sorry to hear about the difficulties you've encountered. A lot of people have encountered similar things as a result of wartime service, and I want to ask our listeners to pray for you and for everybody who's affected by situations like that. In terms of mental health issues' impact on culpability, it's quite true that various factors pertaining to mental health can diminish our culpability for behavior that's objectively sinful. There can be strong psychological compulsions towards certain behaviors that are affected by various conditions, including, for example, post-traumatic stress disorder, which is a common one that affects people who've had traumatic experiences in the military. Now, the degree to which one's culpability for a sinful action is mitigated will depend on the degree to which one's will is affected by the psychological impulse. If there's minimal interference from the psychological factor, then one's culpability will only be minimally affected. If there is extreme disruption of the ordinary functioning of the will by the psychological factor, then one's culpability or responsibility for the sinful action can be totally removed. And then it's possible for it also to be somewhere in the middle. It's very hard in these circumstances to assess exactly what level of responsibility one has. So I would say what I'd recommend, and I can hear the music, so I'll have to be very brief. I would say get the mental help that you can, perhaps based on your military from the Veterans Administration. Go to confession and trust God for whatever level of culpability you have.
Thanks very, very much for that question, Steve. Thanks to everybody who joined us this hour. Next hour, more open forum. So if you're on the line, stay on the line. If you haven't called yet, the number 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. Jimmy, thank you for a very fine hour.
Thank you very much, Si.
And I think Father John Trigilio is going to join us next hour, but I don't have a confirmation on that. So we may come back to you, Jimmy Akin. We'll see.
I guess we'll see.
And hang on. We'll be right back with more Open Forum on Catholic Answers Live right after this.